On April 28th, 2025, a massive power outage struck the Iberian Peninsula, affecting Spain, Portugal, Andorra, and many parts of southern France. The blackout began at exactly 12:33 in the afternoon, and it lasted for many, many hours, disrupting transportation, telecommunications, and essential services. At least 8 fatalities were linked to the outage, possibly more by now, primarily due to fires and carbon monoxide poisoning from improper generator use. This is a subject that has not been sufficiently talked about, in my opinion. But anyway, power was restored to most areas by the following day. The crash made headlines around the world for the size and the depth of the blackout. For a little while there, the country was as close to becoming virtually cut off in terms of communication as you can get. And of course, with the exception of those systems which counted on backup generators, which is actually more than you think, most of us slipped back into the 19th century for about half a day there. Lots of praise was given to Spain for its calm and optimistic reaction and approach to the setback. Cars managed to move through the city streets civilly without any traffic lights, although there was the help of the police here and there. People gathered in public spots and hung out and just talked or played games. There was no looting, no spike in crime, and the general public patiently waited for the electricity to return. And while the Spanish certainly tend to do well in the face of adverse conditions like these, this could have been very different had the situation turned out to be anywhere similar to what was being said at first. Now, when news that the outage was more than a local occurrence and that the whole country had come to a standstill, it generated nerves at first. Unfounded rumors spread quickly. Word had it that all of Spain, Portugal, and southern France had been affected, and Andorra too, as I mentioned at the beginning. But then I was told that it was all of France, and then the Netherlands too. And about an hour later, another person swore that Germany had also been blacked out. So it started to become clear to some of us, based on the information that we knew, that we were facing a kind of cyber attack. Otherwise, who could explain such a widespread shutdown of electricity? Some of us even recalled the EU's recommendation about a month ago or a month and a half ago to buy and stock up on a 3-day survival kit. It made you wonder if maybe Brussels was aware of some threat and that was now being carried out. And then you even had the more dramatic opinions of people whispering that this could be the start of World War III, which, to be honest with you, while a very, very remote possibility, I guess, because you just never know, it really didn't fit my idea of what the end of the world would begin or how it would begin, at least without any warning whatsoever. So by 2 o'clock, about an hour and a half after the power had gone out, I got home for lunch. Neighbors in the building had gathered and were talking about the latest. I was told that the outage was supposed to last for at least 3, maybe 4 days. And that pretty much got everyone's heart thumping. Many were heading for supermarkets to buy water and other things like that. The local five and dime stores, known as chinos here, where they were stocking up on essentials like candles to make it through the night. I hadn't planned personally on any panic shopping, but after talking to some of these neighbors, I sort of joined the bandwagon and ran out and got some candles myself. One of the things we worried about was that basically you couldn't use your credit cards because if the electricity wasn't there, and the systems that we use were not available. And then there was a concern that people wouldn't be able to take out money. Obviously, if you don't have electricity, you're not going to be able to take out money at an ATM machine. So that sort of made people or put them a little bit on edge. Offices were closing early, workers commuted home on foot. The car became the only way to get radio news, and it was also an outlet to charge your phone, for what that was worth, because you had no way of getting information or calling out with your phone anyway, because no one could pick up. By late afternoon, word was spreading that different cities in Spain were recovering their power, usually up north, in San Sebastian, Burgos, Logroño, Cáceres, León. They sort of just listed them off little by little. As one person described it, it was almost like a donut where all the electricity was coming to the parts of Spain around the center where Madrid was, but it finally started to move inward. By late afternoon, people were filling the streets and making the most of the daylight. It was a nice day, and the sun doesn't go down here at this time of year until about 9 or a little bit past 9. Which means that it would be light until about 9:30 or 10 in the evening. And by that time, some of the neighborhoods or the barrios were slowly getting their power back. Just a block from where we lived, the lights went on at 8:30 p.m. and people were sort of cheering in the streets and from their balconies. I thought for sure that we would be there in the same situation just a few minutes later. But alas, we had to wait for another 2.5 hours to get our electricity back. This delay was part of the process, though, because it was done little by little to avoid another breakdown. But anyway, that is pretty much how I lived it, but basically everyone had their story. The Pacific reaction I was telling you about was highlighted in the news, and it was featured in numerous videos and TikToks and things like that, where people were dancing in the street and socializing, kids were playing soccer. And I agree, this was an amazing moment. It is true, by that evening, people were just sort of hanging out and just waiting for things to go back to normal. But I did point out that had this been a more serious situation, had the forecast for restoring electricity really been there for 3 or 4 days, had this really been a cyber attack, for example, or maybe other countries getting affected, just maybe people would have gotten a lot more scared and the situation would not have been so playful. But anyway, so what happened here? That's sort of the million-dollar question, because to date, no one really has the full story. I'm already hearing murmurings from friends and people, we'll never get the full story, which is possible, I guess, but let's hope that we do. Politics is, as usual, invariably going to get involved in the investigation and the accusations and what's happened here. The explanation can get pretty messy. Now, let me tell you a little bit of how things work here. Spain's power grid operator is called Red Eléctrica de España. Sometimes they reduce it to REDEA or REE. Now, this company is in charge of the transportation and connectivity of power and gas. This company is known as a TSO, or Transmission Systems Operator. And Spain's TSO, the REE, is actually, and this is a bit of history for you, the first to be created in the world. This is all the way back in 1985. So basically, it's responsible for making sure that the energy, the electricity, and the power that is being generated gets to its homes and businesses and industries of Spain, something which failed miserably the other day. Now, the government referred to it as a private company, but that certainly does not tell the whole situation here. It is true that most of the shares are in the hands of private investors, but 20% belongs to the Spanish state, a sort of wealth investment company called SEPI, S-E-P-I. And it is actually the biggest shareholder in the company. It's got 20%, and it's the biggest shareholder. So therefore, things like the current chairwoman, Beatriz Corredor, was appointed by the current government under Pedro Sánchez. And basically, it is the state-owned shareholdings that really seem to make most of the decisions here. So while there is a large portion of this company that is private, in reality, there are a lot of aspects about it which are public. Now, like most European countries, the grid here uses a 50 hertz frequency standard, which means that the current oscillates 50 times per second. This standard was adopted by the European countries here many, many years ago. It is key for any network to keep this frequency as constant as possible, and any changes have to be responded to within milliseconds. And what will cause those fluctuations to occur? Well, basically, for the most part, these are changes in production and demand. If the demand goes up, then you may need to increase the production to meet that demand, and vice versa. As one person put it, it's almost like a sink or a bathtub where the level of the water has to be exactly the same, and the production is represented by the water that is flowing into the bathtub from the tap, and the drain represents the consumption. So variations in either one of those could affect the level of water. So since we always want to keep that level the same at all times, we will need to make adjustments depending on the circumstances. The best systems to guarantee, to ensure that this works, tends to be the traditional energy systems, sources. They are better prepared to make sure that the frequency, is constant because they have sensitive detection systems and mechanisms to react quickly. All power sources have what we call inertia. You might recall that from your days of physics in high school. And this refers to the system's ability to absorb and resist changes in the frequency. This is done mainly by having stored energy available, which can be used as a backup when a problem arises. To simplify this, there are systems which provide a lot of inertia. These are the traditional ones like hydropower and steam generated turbines, and they're quite good. But there are systems that don't do a very good job of storing energy, and one of the biggest is photovoltaic solar energy or solar PV, and wind power is another. And what do you know? Over the years, Spain has invested a lot of money and energy and effort into these two sources, and that's because Spain has a lot of sunlight and it also has a lot of wind. Their presence has increased so much that on the day of the blackout, solar energy PV accounted for approximately 59% of Spain's national electricity supply at the time. And then when you include wind power, they constituted over 75%. This situation, under ideal situations when things are going fine, is okay, but it also makes for a very delicate, a very fragile grid. And if things went wrong, which they did that day, the reaction time and the capability to back up that lost energy basically is compromised. On top of that, Spain's grid has a limited interconnection with the broader European system, only 3% compared to the 15%, which is the European Union's target, making it more susceptible to failures. And when the failure was massive enough, systems like the nuclear plants shut down as a preventive measure, which makes sense on one hand because you don't want them to get overloaded. But it also exacerbated the situation because you didn't have this backup energy to keep at least part of the country running, and there was no way to get the energy back fast. Although ironically, the renewable energies helped to do that. Now, the Prime Minister of Spain, Pedro Sánchez, has cautioned against blaming renewables, emphasizing the need for improved grid management and infrastructure. Now, that may be true, but it also seems certain that while renewables may not have caused the crash directly, they did play an important role in the destabilization of the grid, and that just made things worse. And that has created this huge debate about the use of renewable energy. Now, I think we can all agree that there are so many positive things about renewable energy. It is certainly something we should be counting on and investing in for the future. But if there are issues with using too much renewable energy, not because the renewable energy in itself is bad, but its ability to save or maintain a whole national grid is compromised because of certain limitations that it has, especially wind power and solar power, solar PV, which cannot really store the energy that you need to back it up, and they're very slow to react when changes are needed. There are other countries which use almost exclusively renewable energy, and they don't seem to have these problems. Costa Rica, for example, almost gets 100% of its energy from renewable sources, but most of that, the vast majority, comes from hydropower. So it is renewable, but it is traditional in other ways, and it is very good at creating that inertia, which is a buffer to save a grid. So when we talk about renewable energy and its effects, we have to be careful about what kind of renewable energy we are talking about. Now, it is pretty much clear, very clear in fact, that for months the threat of this eventuality had been known to the REE as well as the government, and let's be honest with ourselves, pretty much anyone who was familiar with this subject from around the world. You can find lots of reports and articles talking about this challenge of how to solve the problem with solar PV and wind power. If we know that this system is susceptible or conducive to a collapse, well then things are going to have to be done to prevent that from happening again. Now, exactly what caused it, where Spain lost about 60 to 70% of its power in a matter of 5 seconds, is something that the experts are going to have to investigate and report back on, which will probably take a few months. Authorities have ruled out cyber attacks for now, though a complete report is pending. Other causes include human error and unusual weather as a possible cause too. But as I said, investigations are ongoing with national and EU bodies examining the incident to prevent future occurrences. The event has sparked discussions on enhancing grid resilience, increasing storage capacity, and improving international energy connections. If these three are solved, we could say that it is possible, you can say that Spain will be in a much better situation. So if anything big comes up, we'll keep you posted on it. And that'll be all for this podcast brought to you by Brian's Spain Domain. Please feel free to leave us any comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian's Spain Domain, we greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the very best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. Our podcasts are free, but we welcome you to support us in a number of ways. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. And you can also check us out on our YouTube channel and support us by subscribing. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.